Inflation does erode debt. I mean, the big spike in global inflation right after COVID was the only year where you saw debt ratios come down across the board. Why? Well, nominal GDP went up by more because of inflation, and so debt to GDP sentiment, public sentiment, against cost of living increases is it. In the US, one of the biggest sources of dissatisfaction.
According to popular sentiment, we are currently living through not one, but multiple crises: Iran, Ukraine, tariffs, debt crisis. Which one worries you the most?
Well, it's the combination. I wasn't begging your question. I think the combination is troubling. The fact that we've had so many adverse developments. So the war with Iran, the more recent war, since we still have, of course, the Russia-Ukraine war ongoing, but the most recent war. Coupled with the tariffs and the trade fragmentation that has set in motion, would be enough to pivot you into stagflation territory. So you ask yourself, why aren't we there? Why aren't we in a recession? And I think importantly, the answer lies in that AI and the AI boom has importantly acted to offset those shocks. But when one says AI and AI boom, one can just as easily say AI bubble and ask the question of how long can that last?
You think it's a bubble?
Yes. Bubbles are very easy to identify in the rearview mirror, right? After the fact, after they burst. Bubbles, prediction of the timing of a burst of a bubble, good luck, But bubbles have common symptoms beforehand. It's like an illness, right? That you may not know how it's exactly going to affect that particular person, but there's certain symptoms. And those symptoms usually involve valuations that are significantly out of line with any historic norm. Increasing reliance on debt financing,
As is the case in AI.
as is the case in AI, overinvestment. When I said AI had been an offset, part of that offset, importantly, is just the surge in investment spending. But you look at investment spending in the US, for example, across sectors, and the uncertainty that we've had has had it taken its toll on other industries, except for AI. But overinvestment means that for many firms, which want to play the good race, but this is not a race that everybody wins, right? This is a winner-takes-all race. And so they will have overinvested and they will have financed that by debt, which means, the usual aftermath of many previous bubbles. Some will face significant losses and some will face bankruptcies. So the symptoms are there. So when you ask me what risks do I worry about, I worry about the conglomerate, right? The fact that we have, war issues, that we have inflation issues, that we have trade disruptions, and that we have an unfolding bubble. So it's a lot to digest.
And how do the high levels of debt play into this? I mean, we have, I think, levels of government debt that are unprecedented in outside of wars historically. How does
And
that
even there,
play,
yeah.
even in wars? Yeah.
So how does that play out? Well, let's think about the previous question, right? Which is, what kinds of shocks, adverse shocks? Well, we had COVID, we had the global financial crisis, and what did those crises involve? It involved government spending, it involved stimulus to offset the impact of those shocks. So, at a minimum minimorum, the levels of debt constrain to what extent there can be the kind of response that would have been possible had it not been for the high levels of public debt.
But one could argue that before COVID, the debt was already very
Hi.
high,
Yeah.
and still governments managed to spend their way through
Absol
the COVID crisis.
absolutely. And nowhere was that more the case than in the US. But there was a difference between the global financial crisis and the surge in inflation that occurred alongside Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We had nominal interest rates at historic lows. Real interest rates were exceptionally low by any historic standards. We had a block of years, around 15 years, in which sustained negative real interest rates. What are negative real interest rates? A tax on the bondholder, right? Great to finance debt. It's a transfer from the saver to the borrower. We're not in that world anymore. So this is a big difference because all of a sudden debt has teeth that it didn't have before. And in effect, if you look, for example, at the US, where the surge in public debt has been alarming. And this is alarming not in the partisan sense, the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan, very serious institution, is very concerned about the trajectory of US debt and its sustainability or lack thereof. The issue of not worrying about debt, taking for granted that interest rates would remain low, fueled that policy response in COVID, right? The argument went, if R is less than G, if real interest rates is less than growth, we're good. Well,
We're not in that territory anymore.
we're not in that territory anymore.
And also outside the US, I mean, in the EU, Germany is now starting to accumulate more debt. Even in Switzerland, which has a relatively low level of debt, because of our debt brake, politicians are thinking about kind of weakening the debt brake in order to spend more money.
When we turn to Europe, I think, we have to also, you brought up Germany, but even before Germany, I'd bring up France, right? I mean, they, like the US, they were also marked down recently by the credit rating agencies.
I mentioned Germany because it has the
And,
reputation of a
oh,
sound fiscal
absolutely.
policy.
But here is, the. When you going back to your first question, what do I worry about the most? It's the interaction of these things, right? Because why is Germany now, and why is Switzerland considering this? Well, we have a whole new defense initiative. Why do we have a whole new defense initiative in Europe? Well, yes, part of it is Trump, but Trump is there one of the few instances where it's he wasn't the main driver. The main driver is that we have now war in Europe in a way that we hadn't seen since World War II. And so the rethinking of the role of defense is a big driver. And these are very difficult decisions. Switzerland has enjoyed exceptional stability in its fiscal, in its monetary and inflation. It's Germany and Switzerland are two of the shrinking number of countries that still have AAA status. Other advanced economies had lost that along the way. I think the necessity of re-kiltering the defense preparedness is very real. But I think I would approach it with very much a conservative view towards debt buildups because the dynamics are not favorable, even for well-managed, conservative fiscal policies. The demographic of an aging population puts pressure on debt.
Why?
Social Security. We made promises, the we meaning the advanced economies usually made promises in Social Security that those promises were made when populations were much younger and the working age population was growing much more rapidly, so the ability to provide those benefits, which much more viable.
And an older population is also less innovative and less dynamic, maybe, and doesn't have the same kind of growth prospects.
Well, I think the main one is, you have a life cycle hypothesis. You participate in the labor force, you consume more, you have greater contributions to aggregate spending, and then as you age, that balance changes. And you rely more on not just your own personal saving, but also what you presumably accumulated. Aging populations, have tilt the balance towards more debt accumulation.
And I think even if we forget about the aging populations,
It's hard to do that because that's a big one.
but apart from that, I think there are structural reasons for the rising levels of debt. I mean, you mentioned the low interest rates. The defense spending is relatively recent, but fundamentally, I
Climate.
think climate, yeah. But I think fundamentally, societies, richer societies, become more like they have a higher demand for government spending, I would guess. And I think that's also one of the reasons for the low levels of debt.
Look, I think Switzerland's been rich for a very long time. And Germany is also, these are examples of advanced economies, and the Netherlands, these are examples of advanced economies where debt levels have been kept comparatively low. So, there's also, political attitudes towards debt are quite important. In the US, neither party has really cared much about debt buildups and fiscal deficits in years and years and years. I think Clinton was the last one that, President Clinton was probably the last one that actually cared more about fiscal balances and so what I am saying is debt buildups for whatever reason, whether it's climate, whether it's defense, whether it's an aging population, whether it's I don't care attitude towards debt, or higher debt servicing costs contributing, whatever the reason, it will be more and more a limiting factor in their response to adverse shocks. It doesn't say government won't respond. It says that you will be more constrained.
Yeah. And how do we get out of this debt spiral?
It is much easier to get into it than to get out of it. That
Definitely.
is the summary. Most of the options are either economically or politically unattractive from a political standpoint. So we know fiscal. Okay. What does it mean, fiscal? It means you raise taxes, reduce expenditure, or a combination of the two. Politically challenging, that's an understatement. Okay. Inflation. Inflation does erode debt. I mean, the big spike in global inflation right after COVID was the only year where you saw debt ratios come down across the board. Why? Well, the nominal GDP went up by more because of inflation, and so debt to GDP
Yeah.
sentiment, public sentiment, against cost of living increases is it. In the US, one of the biggest sources of dissatisfaction is concerns about cost of living. So, inflation is also not a particularly attractive.
Inflation is also tax,
It's a
basically.
tax. It's a tax. It's always a tax. Whichever way you slice it, it's a tax. Okay? And it's a very regressive tax. And another tax is haircuts, right? To restructure your debt. Default is not an easy thing, and debt restructuring is a tax. It's a tax on the creditors. Financial repression, which we have already seen quite a bit, especially in Japan, that doesn't, it's a tax, a financial repression tax, but it's usually not sufficient. It contributes to reducing debt, but it's not sufficient, and it's also quite distortionary.
Yeah. So there's no way out.
I didn't say that. I didn't say there was no attractive
Yeah.
way out. And so, if you look over time, over the course of history, debt reductions, except those debt reductions that have occurred during either war. And you get a hyperinflation or a very high inflation, or other forms of other types of crises that prompt, unthinkable fiscal changes. Debt reduction has tended to be more gradual, it's in countries like the US and Japan, it's not, especially the US, but also Japan, it's not even debated. I mean, each time you talk about, well, in France we also had the debacle around the budgets, and it's easier to get into debt than to get out of it.
Yeah, and governments are not really reducing spending. To the contrary, I think we're seeing a revival of industrial policy recently.
Well, so
Do you think that's temporary or that's a paradigm shift?
it's I wouldn't call it temporary. If it's temporary, it's quite persistent. But let me say two things on that. We could add industrial policy to the long list of climate initiatives, defense, and social security needs and debt servicing costs. But the issue of swift debt reduction, even if you take out climate initiatives, which are comparatively relative to the historical examples I talked about, comparatively new. Industrial policy is not new. We've had it on and off, or defense initiatives. And even if you strip those things away, takes time to unwind.
Now, people could say, well, you warn about crises and crashes for quite some time, but still, we since the financial crisis, we didn't really have that much of a shock. Even the COVID crisis was in retrospect, relatively mild.
Are you kidding me? Relatively mild?
No, I mean, it was a dip, but
Maybe in Switzerland, but not,
you
no.
return to growth relatively
No, no,
quickly.
no, no. It's so the COVID shock was very regressive shock. I was chief economist at the World Bank during the COVID shock. The advanced economies led by the US had the most countercyclical response, fiscal response to fill in the shortfall in aggregate demand from the paralysis. As you move to middle-income countries, the response, fiscal response, was much less. As you move to low-income countries, the fiscal response was nil. And if you look at the how long it's taken to get back to pre-COVID levels, it also is quite regressive.
Do you expect
And
a similar trajectory when another external shock will come, or will it be worse?
no, I mean it depends on the shock, right? I mean, the global financial crisis, it took the US about 5 years to return to per capita income growth before the crisis. Many of the European countries, on average, it took twice that, twice, 10 years. And in, of course, the more extreme cases, which were Italy and Greece, they don't return to per capita, pre-crisis per capita income from. So it depends on the nature of the shock. That shock involved deleveraging of households, which is a long process that weighs down. So it depends on the nature of the shock. Consider, for example, if the AI bubble were to burst, it's not going to be the same impacts as the global financial crisis, because the global financial crisis was importantly connected to housing. Housing is importantly connected to households. Now, it is true that wealth effects are also going to impact households from because households have savings, they have retirement plans, and so they have exposure to the equity market. But the scale of exposure in housing was very significant. And so, a shock that hit the household so hard creates a bigger hole in the economy. An AI bubble burst is more skewed to what happens is to businesses. And take it with a grain of salt, right? That because this example is from another era, but during the railroad boom of the 19th century, you had a lot of overbuilding, a lot of overinvestment. Sound familiar? You had a lot of redundant railroad lines, and you had a lot of back fa a lot of failures of equity prices of railroads stocks, equity railroad stocks crashed, bonds defaulted. It was, it difficult to say, oh, that a shock in the future is going to take much longer to recover. It depends on the nature of the shock. I'm not dodging your question. I'm just saying it depends very much on the nature of the shock to talk about how long recovery or what recovery may look like.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Karen Reinhardt, thank you very much.
You're welcome.